Heretics, Chapter 3, on Mr. Rudyard Kipling and Making the World Small. There is no such thing on earth as an uninteresting subject. The only thing that can exist is an uninteresting person. Nothing is more keenly required than a defense of bores. When Byron divided humanity into the bores and bored, he omitted to notice that the higher qualities exist entirely in the bores. The lower qualities in the bored, among whom he counted himself. The bore, by his starry enthusiasm, his solemn happiness, may in some sense have proved himself poetical. The bored has certainly proved himself prosaic. We might, no doubt, find it a nuisance to count all the blades of grass or all the leaves of the trees, but this would not be because our boldness or gaiety, but because of our lack of boldness and gaiety. The boar would go onward, bold and gay, and find the blades of grass as splendid as the swords of an army. The boar is stronger and more joyous than we are. He is a demigod. Nay, he is a god. For it is the gods who do not tire of the iteration of things. To them, the nightfall is always new, and the last rose as red as the first. The sense that everything is poetical is a thing solid and absolute. It is not a mere matter of phraseology or persuasion. It is not merely true, it is ascertainable. Men may be challenged to deny it. Men may be challenged to mention anything that is not a matter of poetry. I remember a long time ago a sensible sub-editor coming up to me with a book in his hand called Mr. Smith, or The Smith Family, or some such thing. He said, "Well, you won't get any of your damn mysticism out of this," or words to that effect. I am happy to say that I undeceived him, but the victory was too obvious and easy. In most cases, the name is unpoetical, although the fact is poetical. In the case of the name Smith, the name is so poetical that it must be an arduous and heroic matter for the man to live up to it. The name of Smith is the name of the one trade that even kings respected. It could claim half the glory of that arma procume which all epics acclaim. The spirit of the smithy is so close to the spirit of song that it has mixed in a million poems, and every blacksmith is a harmonious blacksmith. Even the village children feel that in some dim way the smith is poetic, as the grocer and the cobbler are not poetic when they feast on the dancing sparks and deafening blows in the cavern of that creative violence. The brute repose of nature, the passionate cunning of man, the strongest of earthly metals, the weirdest of earthly elements, the unconquerable iron subdued by its only conqueror, the wheel and the plowshare, the sword and the steam hammer, the arraying of armies and the whole legend of arms. All these things are written, briefly indeed, but quite legibly, on the visiting card of Mr. Smith. Yet our novelists call their hero Aylmer Valance, which means nothing, or Werner Raymond, which means nothing, when it is in their power to give him this sacred name of Smith, this name made of iron and flame. It would be very natural if a certain hauteur, a certain carriage of the head, a certain curl of the lip, distinguished everyone whose name is Smith. Perhaps it does, I trust so. Whoever else are parvenus, the Smiths, are not parvenus. From the darkest dawn of history, this clan has gone forth to battle. Its trophies are on every hand. Its name is everywhere. It is older than the nations, and its sign is the hammer of Thor. But, as I also remarked, it is not quite the usual case. It is common enough that common things should be poetical. It is not so common that common names should be poetical. In most cases, it is the name that is the obstacle. A great many people talk as if this claim of ours, that all things are poetical, were a mere literary ingenuity, play on words. Precisely the contrary is true. It is the idea that some things are not poetical which is literary, which is a mere product of words. The word signal box is unpoetical, but the thing signal box is not unpoetical. It is a place where men, in an agony of vigilance, light blood red and sea green fires to keep other men from death. That is the plain, genuine description of what it is. The prose only comes in with what it is called. The word pillar box is unpoetical, but the thing pillar box is not unpoetical. It is a place to which friends and lovers commit their messages, conscious that when they have done so, they are sacred and not to be touched, not only by others, but even religious touch by themselves. That red turret is one of the last of the temples. Posting a letter and getting married are among the few things left that are entirely romantic. For, to be entirely romantic, a thing must be irrevocable. We think a pillar box prosaic because there is no rhyme in it. We think a pillar box unpoetical because we have never seen it in a poem. But the bold fact is entirely on the side of poetry. A signal box is only called a signal box. It is a house of life and death. A pillar box is only called a pillar box. It is a sanctuary of human words. If you think the name of Smith prosaic, it is not because you are practical and sensible. It is because you are too much affected with literary refinements. The name shouts poetry at you. If you think of it otherwise, it is because you are steeped and sodden with verbal reminiscences, because you remember everything in Punch or comic cuts about Mr. Smith being drunk or Mr. Smith being henpecked. All these things were given to you poetical. It is only by a long and elaborate process of literary effort that you have made them prosaic. Now, the first and fairest thing to say about Rudyard Kipling is that he has borne a brilliant part in thus recovering the lost provinces of poetry. He has not been frightened by that brutal, materialistic air which clings only to words. He has pierced through to the romantic, imaginative matter of the things themselves. He has perceived the significance and philosophy of steam and of slang. Steam may be, if you like, a dirty byproduct of science. Slang may be, if you like, a dirty byproduct of language. But at least he has been among the few who saw the divine parentage of these things and knew that where there is smoke, there is fire. That is, that wherever there is the foulest of things, there also is the purest. Above all, he has had something to say, a definite view of things to utter, and that always means that a man is fearless and faces everything. For the moment, we have a view of the universe. We possess it. Now, the message of Rudyard Kipling, that upon which he has really concentrated, is the only thing worth worrying about in him or in any other man. He has often written bad poetry, like Wordsworth. He has often said silly things, like Plato. He has often given way to mere political hysteria, like Gladstone. But no one can reasonably doubt that he means steadily and sincerely to say something, and the only serious question is, what is that which he has tried to say? Perhaps the best way of stating this fairly will be to begin with that element which has been most insisted by himself and by his opponents, I mean his interest in militarism. But when we are seeking for the real merits of a man, it is unwise to go to his enemies, and much more foolish to go to himself. Now, Mr. Kipling is certainly wrong in his worship of militarism, but his opponents are, generally speaking, quite as wrong as he. The evil of militarism is not that it shows certain men to be fierce and haughty and excessively warlike. The evil of militarism is that it shows most men to be tame and timid and excessively peaceable. The professional soldier gains more and more power as the general courage of a community declines. Thus, the Praetorian Guard became more and more important in Rome as Rome became more and more luxurious and feeble. The military man gains the civil power in proportion as the civilian loses the military virtues. And as it was in ancient Rome, so it is in contemporary Europe. There never was a time when nations were more militarist. There never was a time when men were less brave. All ages and all epochs have sung of arms and the man, but we have effected simultaneously the deterioration of the man and the fantastic perfection of the arms. Militarism demonstrated the decadence of Rome, and it demonstrates the decadence of Prussia.